Jackson. I'm going to repeat that. 37 and a quarter. Hurry for the lead.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to an all-new Dubs Talk presented by Wendy's. Get a $1.99 honey butter chicken biscuit today. It is delicious. Trust me, Kendra and I have had one or two or maybe more than that, and it is great. Okay, so very shortly, we'll be tossing to an interview that we did with Andrew Bogut, the big Aussie, joined us all the way from Gold Coast in Australia. He's so knowledgeable when it comes to basketball. It was really a pleasure talking to him, and he's able to break down a lot of things that we're seeing this season. And of course we talk about Jasidian Jessup. Everybody calm down, of course. But before we get to that, you and I planned to do this pod and we were like, oh, it'll be great. Maybe we'll see a really awesome game between the Mavs and the Warriors. And, you know, we'll talk about how the Warriors maybe are 1.5 games out of the sixth seed and all this stuff. Kendra, tell us, give us the state of the union.
It's not good. it's not a great state that the Warriors are in. Just coming off of an absolute blowout loss to the Dallas Mavericks, 133-103. The game was over before it started. The Warriors had a 1-point lead with 4 minutes into the game, and from there, the Mavs went on a 28-0 run that spanned from the first quarter into the second quarter. And it's not good. This game, as you mentioned, they were really close in the standings for that sixth spot. The Warriors have said they feel that they can get that sixth spot and completely avoid the play-in scenarios. And after this loss, it just does not seem very likely. It's looking like the Warriors, if they want to make the playoffs, they're going to have to go through the play-in games, because even if the Warriors go 10-0 the rest of the season, as long as the Mavs go at least 7-4, the sixth spot is theirs. So the Warriors are in a tricky predicament right now.
Yeah, they absolutely are. But, you know, it's hard to see at this part of the season to see a blowout like that. You're not expecting it. So, I mean, just from what you heard in the pressers or anything pop out to you that you're like, huh, that's odd.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. And, you know, Steph Curry was asked about late season fatigue this is the type of blowout loss that the Warriors suffered early on in the season. And then it was not excusable, but maybe more understandable. Now they have been playing their best basketball of the season. And something that we heard multiple times when talking to Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, Michael Mulder, Juan Toscano-Anderson after the game, was that they said we were just unprepared. Steve Kerr said, I didn't prepare them enough for this game. And that really made me sit back and go, what do you mean you felt underprepared for this game? Because you all also identified this game as, quote, the most important game of the season. Now, the Warriors haven't practiced since April 8th. They're having their first practice since then on Wednesday. And it had been working for them just fine. You know, they had fresh legs. They started this on that road trip that saw them get really fatigued and really tired. And so that was the right decision. But to me, you can't say, well, we're not going to practice because this is helping us win. And then when you lose what you called the most important game of the season, then you say you were unprepared. I asked Michael Mulder, well, what were you unprepared for? Because you guys all identified, you have this circled on your calendar. He said, well, we weren't prepared maybe for their energy. And to me, again, that just seems really backwards. That again, you knew this was the biggest game of the season. And yet whether it was how the Mavs were going to come out or just you guys mentally or whatever you guys were going to do on the court, it seems like BS, quite frankly, that you say that you're unprepared.
Yeah, I mean, that's a, I don't want to say a damning thing to hear, but that's something where you start going, huh, that's odd. Now, a lot of times in the past, that'd be coach speak, to just be like, you know, taking the onus on himself, Steve Kerr saying like, oh, the team was unprepared, I need to do a better job. But it was odd that it kind of was a theme in a lot of what they were saying. And it makes you wonder, is it just the ability for this team to kind of turn it on in terms of their just, it's not as much maybe preparation about like, the scouting, the X's and O's, and you know, they probably do all the film work and they do all those things. Maybe is it just the unprepared to immediately start the engines and start going early? Because we have seen multiple times throughout the season them having a very hard time starting really strong. They corrected it a little bit, but at the same time, it just makes you wonder. It's like, why does it take a team a little bit to get going? Why weren't they ready to match the Mavericks' energy out the gate? We knew the Mavericks knew how important this game was. They literally just lost in Sacramento, so they were going to be coming out being like, we're playing for our lives here. So, yeah, it was almost as if the Warriors saw them lose the Kings the night before and just said, yeah, I we should be fine. We'll be okay. They're on a back-to-back. We're at home, blah, blah, blah. So it was a little alarming, Kendra. I do agree with you. That's just an alarming thing to hear.
Yeah, and I also agree with you that it is coach talk or player talk to a certain extent, and to not ring the alarm too loud, but it rings a different kind of alarm. Mm-hmm. And it makes you think of, okay, well, the playoffs are coming and the play-ins are coming and the play-ins are one and done, win or go home. And you know, being able to flip a switch is a big debate, I feel, that is that even a thing that you can do? And seems like the Warriors can't. So, you know, or at least right now.
In the past, it used to be that flipping the switch as they get into playoffs because they were so good that they could have kind of coasted a little bit. And then everyone's like, oh, they're struggling this badly. They can't just flip a switch. And yes, they did that. Draymond Green and these guys would just all of a sudden go into playoff mode. This is different. This is very different. So I'm with you on that. Before we get to Andrew Bogut, just very quickly, I just want to update everyone on the NBA draft situation for the Warriors with their picks. First of all, right now, the Warriors, I think, are tied for the 14th worst record in the NBA, which would make them have either the 14th or 15th pick. Technically, there's a lottery. It's confusing. But the moral of the story is, for that pick, it is top 20 protected, because if it falls in the 21 to 30 range, it goes to Oklahoma City. In this case, even if the Warriors go 10-0 the rest of the season, other teams would have to do pretty poorly for them to lose that pick. So we're almost positive at this point the Warriors will at least have their own pick. As for the Minnesota Timberwolves pick, Minnesota right now is not even the worst record or the second worst record in the league. They're third worst. So that team has been playing so well for their standards. First of all, they've swept Utah Jazz this year, which is crazy. But the Rockets are tanking beyond tanking. So the Rockets are, unless something dramatic happens, Kendra, the Rockets are going to have the worst record in the league. So why does this matter? Because as the further that the Wolves fall, that means the Warriors can have a worse and worse pick if it does end up in their hands. The percentages don't change that much between having the worst record in the league to the fourth or fifth. It actually has about 60% chance of vesting for the Warriors. So really, you're not rooting for the Wolves to get to that fourth spot because you have a better chance of going to the worst. That's actually not true. For every spot the Wolves climb out of the cellar, the Warriors have the opportunity to have a worst pick if it vests. So to make a long story short, you're really rooting hard. If you're a Warriors fan, you're really, really rooting hard for the Warriors to not only beat the Timberwolves next game, but for the Timberwolves to lose a lot more.
That makes sense. And two important back-to-back games for the Warriors with the Mavs on Tuesday and then the Wolves. And you know, for very different reasons. It's very like opposite ends of the spectrums of which one's more important. But
yeah,
they have another important one for them.
It is a very important one. And hey, you know what? If they were smart, maybe they purposely lose to Houston after mm-hmm. the Timberwolves. So it gives Houston a win. No. I mean, I think there's a chance the Wolves are playing so well, there's a chance they end up with the third, fourth. Fifth is tough to say, but maybe third or fourth worst record in the NBA. And I mean, again, the Warriors will have to get lucky to get that pick, but the dream world for them was always, could they get the Minnesota pick this season and have it be the fourth or fifth pick? that is their dream, because the top five guys in the NBA draft are in a league of their own right now in terms of talent evaluation. And if you can get in that top five, you feel very good. And the only way they could do it is fourth or fifth. So that is something to check on. I figured I'd give a little update about that so we could just kind of turn our attention away from how awful that game was against the Mavs. And the other thing to turn your attention away from that is talking to Andrew Bogut. Kendra, in this interview, I think you have the better questions. I'm just going to say that.
Wow. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. It just, that's all I got.
So everyone else, I was having a good day that day.
Everyone else, you get to decide if that was right or not. So, hey, check it out. Here's Andrew Bogut. Thanks, as always, for listening.
Dish and Sling customers, don't miss a game this season on NBC Sports Bay Area and NBC Sports California. Don't miss your A's, your Giants, your Kings, your Sharks, your Warriors. To keep watching your favorite teams, go to howtowatchnbcsports.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Dubs Talk, presented by Wendy's. Grant Liffman here alongside Kendra Andrews. And we have a special guest for you. He is a former Warrior. He's an NBA champion. And if you haven't listened to it yet, make sure to check out Rogue Bogues podcast. Andrew Bogut, thank you for joining us.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're joining us out from Sydney right now. And is that correct?
I'm on the Gold Coast, but yeah, we're on Sydney time. So it's made it a bit easier. I figured if I said Gold Coast time, you'd have no idea what I'm talking about.
That's actually a really good point. Yeah, no, but I heard Australia is awesome, so I have to go out there. But in a couple minutes, I do want to ask you plenty of questions about the greatest shooter in history. Of course, I'm talking about Justinian Jessup. But before we get to him, how about we talk about Steph Curry? You familiar with him?
Yeah, in the last month, it's been insane. Before the season started, there were people that weren't that high on Golden State making the playoffs. I had them 6 to 10, 11, just based on the nights that Steph Curry's having. So I kind of thought that he'd have, 20 or 30 games where it's just bonkers and bananas, and he's single-handedly keeping them or carrying them to a win. And it's been pretty spot on. He's just an unbelievable player and makes that team, you see when he's out of the lineup, no disrespect for guys, they're not a very deep, overly talented team. A lot of young guys are developing, but for him to still be out there and learning how to obviously play with different guys and hold different lineups again and still being able to get those numbers is just insane.
Have you been able to check in and watch a good amount of the Warriors games this year?
Yeah, I've watched a fair few. I try to watch as much as I can. The lockdown COVID stuff is kind of all around the world, really. Try to tune out with support whenever I get an opportunity. I have two young kids, so it makes it a bit challenging at times to knuckle down and see every play. But yeah, I've definitely followed not only Golden State, but just the league and everything going on. It's been, it's been an interesting year on many fronts, not just COVID, but just injuries and some surprising teams. The teams are doing worse than we thought. And yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun to follow it.
And just one more question about Steph in regards to, you've got a chance to see him. He's doing historic, crazy things right now. The way he's playing right now, going back to, you were with him when he had the unanimous MVP season. You were with him for both MVPs, but the unanimous MVP season, everyone kind of assumed that was his peak, right? That was the best Steph Curry. What you're seeing from him now, do you see a growth in certain parts of his game? Does it just completely resemble what you saw that year? What's your take on that?
Well, the biggest thing I respect about Steph is he had to modify his game a little bit after those MVP runs. Two-time MVP and then let the guy sign with the team that is essentially one of the best basketball players in the world that would then share that spotlight as being the best guy on the team and was comfortable with it. Took a lesser role to an extent. He knew, I'm going to take lesser shots. I'm not going to have the ball in my hands as much. We're going to make sure that Clay and KD and different guys are getting involved. And to go from that into back to where he is now, to flick that switch of I'm the guy again and I need to be a 30, 40 point scorer, that's hard to do. I wasn't at that level when I played. I went from Milwaukee Bucks where I was the number one, number two option to Golden State where I was 4, 5, 6 option. And then trying to even for myself to come back and find an Australian and then realize you're the one, two option, it was hard. And that was coming back to Australia. So the fact that Steph has just been able to fit in and still play at an elite level within different roles, it's a credit to him as not only a player, but as a person, that he would accept those roles happily. Because I can tell you, no matter how much a lot of guys in the NBA talk about, you know, we want to win a championship and all that kind of stuff, all of a sudden, if it's not you on that billboard every time when you're supposed to be the franchise guy, 99% of the guys don't like that. As much as they'll lie to the media, they don't. And he genuinely was one guy that was like, hey, going to win us more games and I'm still going to do my thing.
It's interesting to say because, you know, I don't know if it ever felt maybe from the outside perspective that it wasn't Steph's team when KD was there, but it's interesting to think of it from the other point of view of that was a role shift. From what you've seen from Steph this season, do you think he's an MVP contender? Do you think that there are other guys who could take it from him this season?
I mean, since last month, definitely. I think the record hurt Golden State. I mean, if we're being honest, I think Steph's one of the most valuable players in the league every year. Even in his down years, the last, you know, 5-6 years, numbers-wise, he's still one of the most valuable guys, because even when he's not scoring the ball, he demands so much attention that it's opening up space for other guys. But, I mean, for me, Nikola Jokic is... I don't think there's anyone that close to him. I just don't think he gets as much attention as he's due because he's not a... He's not an Instagram guy. He's not a guy that's, you know, always on the jump and all these TV shows, not over-promoting himself. So I think that hurts him in today's climate, but I think his numbers are bananas, and what he's doing, you know, and he's been healthy. I don't think he's missed any games at all. So that definitely helps as well. So I think he's a clear front runner. I think Embiid, Giannis, and Steph are probably right there with the next phase after Jokic.
We've heard from a couple guys, especially this season with the Warriors roster being so new, so much turnover from the last couple of years, that it's actually a challenging adjustment to play alongside Steph just because of the way, you know, he spaces the floor, his movements. If you don't know exactly what he's doing, you might get in his way or miss a pass, miss a shot. When you were playing with him, did you experience that too? Of there is definitely an adjustment period because his game is so different?
To an extent, yeah, but I think plays very well with people that can read and react quickly, because, like you said, he demands so much time, space, attention, that you can, a lot of things open up for yourself, and then it's a matter of figuring out how teams are covering in the coverage. But it's an interesting system, especially for Wiseman. I've touched on this in the podcast on Roy Bogues, because it's not a traditional five spot to an extent. You're generally getting a post up to pass. You generally get a post up to dribble away from the post and go to a handoff to Steph, or when Clay's healthy or KD in the past. So for a guy like Wiseman, it's a hard adjustment when you're the man in college and high school and we're throwing it down to you to score. Whereas Golden State's a little bit different. It's the post stuff's generally a diversion to try and get a three up. So, you know, there's definitely a learning curve there for guys like Wiseman and bigger guys. But once you figure it out, the read and react stuff, and you realize that, like for me, it was like wide open lob dunk, wide open dunk, another wide open layup, just because of the movement and spacing that creates.
Yeah, well, actually, we're definitely going to have follow up about your thoughts on James Wiseman. But, you know, going back to one of the stalwarts of guys that were with you on the team, and he, I mean, he said you're one of the best defenders he's ever played with and one of the smartest defenders he's ever played with. And obviously I'm referring to Draymond Green. He came on this podcast a couple weeks ago, and you probably saw the statement he made on our podcast where he declared himself the greatest defender in the history of the NBA. When you hear something like that, what's your takeaway? Do you say, oh yeah, absolutely. Or do you say, are you one of the people that goes, well, that's what you're supposed to say?
Both. I think that's what you're supposed to say. Draymond's confidence is probably one of his biggest strengths. He's always been doubted throughout his career because of his size, and people always look at those labels about undersized, can't shoot it well enough, and he just continues to win games and be a guy that helps you win. I don't think he's... I kind of touched on this a while ago. As far as a lockdown one-on-one defender, I don't think he's the best. As far as a complete team defender, he's up there. So... I know Tony Allen fired up at him, and I think if you put, you know, all your marbles for a one-on-one stop, you probably take Tony Allen. Let's say stopping LeBron or KD or Michael Jordan, you give Tony Allen that one-on-one coverage. But as far as the overall defensive impact for a team, deflection, quarterbacking your defense, being in the right spot in the right time, and he's still a good on-ball defender. I'm not taking that away from him. I'd take Draymond from a team aspect over Tony Allen. But if I need a one-on-one stop, I'd probably go with Tony Allen.
Would you say that Draymond is the best defender that you've ever played with in your career?
For me, yeah. The only other guy that was close that no one ever talks about, Luke Marbute, when he was healthy in Milwaukee for me, next to me at the fourth spot when I played with him 2 or 3 years. He was up there. He had a chance to be a very, very good defender. An elite, but he just couldn't get healthy, had a few injuries, but he was a guy that was kind of ahead of his time. He got to pitch 1 through 5 and just knew the game was long, very, very good defender. So he'd be the next one I'd pick for Draymond, without a doubt. And that's why, you know, our defense was where it was. You had me, you know, protecting the rim at an elite level, Draymond behind me, or sometimes vice versa. And we just kind of were on a string. And it was just very hard for other teams to get easy stuff against us. And even when they did, we'd get a deflection last minute, or we'd mess the play up and I'd come in and get a deflection or a block shot right at the last second when we should have been scored on. So it was a fun, you know, fun defensive group to be a part of. And even Stephen, you know, Clay's an all-league defender, in my opinion, doesn't get as much attention because he shoots the ball so well. And Steph's defensive improvement from the first 2 years to now has been phenomenal as well.
And then you have Iguodala as well out there. And then, you know, Livingston as well. Sean Livingston, those have been long defenders right there.
Yeah, and then we had Festus stacking me up, you know, who's a really good rim protector as well, physical guy down there. You know, the number of guys, Harrison Barnes got better throughout the year. So we had a really good defensive team that bought into being good defensively. It's not, you got to have good defenders, but you also need guys that actually want to step in and do the right thing for the team. And that doesn't always happen in our league.
So Draymond Green is in the top 5 right now in assists in the league most of the season right now. He's averaging nearly 10 assists a game. It took some time to get him acclimated into the season for various reasons. But, you know, there's some that say, Draymond, we need you to score more. There's some that say, you know, Draymond, you need to do this. Where do you analyze Draymond Green's game now, and where could you see him helping the team more?
Well, I think he's never going to be a prolific scorer. That's just not his game. You know, he does so many good things that don't show up on the stat sheet that you kind of need to take that into account at times. But I think that for the most part, I think he needs to be around that 10-point mark for them to be a serious contender in the playoff or at least make a push. He doesn't have to score big numbers, but if he can get to 10 a game, you know, I think that then keeps defenses more accountable, especially late game. But I mean, I think it's overblown at times. I mean, Ben Simmons, an Australian guy, so I know him very well. He gets the same kind of rap, doesn't shoot the ball well, but you know, that's true to an extent, and you do need to shoot the ball, especially playoff time and finals time. You're going to have to get that big shot from three. But there's so many things that they do that doesn't get talked about. They're both all-league defenders. They're absolutely getting the deflections they shouldn't have. They get involved in plays. They're fiery. They're physical. They make their teammates better. So you need those guys on the floor. I mean, would you love for them to be able to shoot the ball at 40% for three? Of course. But I think Draymond's role on that team, I mean, you know, the other night was a 19 assist. I mean, he just does so many good things out there that I don't think you need to rely on him to score 23.
You mentioned James Wiseman, so let's go back to him for a moment. Obviously, you know, his rookie season didn't go the way I think he wanted it to, the Warriors wanted it to, just with all of the injuries and being placed in so many COVID protocols. But what do you think of James Wiseman? What do you think his future looks like with the team? And it is hard to judge, you know, his rookie season because he never really got a chance to hit any kind of stride.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I see some of the rhetoric about him, and I don't think it's fair. He's 1 year in his, you know, NBA career. He's had a season that's a big adjustment already, as I mentioned earlier, playing with a guy like Steph and playing with a different system for a 5-man. Not only trying to figure that out on the fly, then you're playing next to Draymond. So Draymond's going to demand the best out of you defensively, try to help him and mentor him there. Then you're learning the fundamentals of the game. He's still catching up with all that. And he's probably still towards the tail end of growing into his body and filling out lifting weights. So you got to be patient. And I know Warriors fans expect the best, and that's where it's a tricky slide. You don't want to push this kid like, oh, he's not going to be that good. It's 1 year in. You know, at year three, I think you get a pretty good feel of what kind of player he's going to be. But till then, you got to live with the ups and downs. And I think he has some tools that are very hard to teach. He looks like he's going to be a very good shot blocker and rim protector. He kind of already is, but he's clearing out the fouls and all that. Seems to be a decent ball handler. So, you know, you can see him bringing it off the rim a la Draymond and going straight to transition. And he's shooting the three ball. And that's a big plus. I mean, he's not at a high clip, but the fact that he's shooting it and he's confident enough to do it in that system will help. So he's getting his feet wet. He's obviously dealing with some body issues, which is never good. So hopefully he can get healthy. But I mean, I urge Warriors fans and people out there that have knocked him, you know, give it 2 or 3 years. You know, he's a young kid, he's learning the game, and then, you know, after year 3 or 4, we can chat about, you know, whether he's going to be a long-term solution for the Warriors.
How do you develop while recovering from an injury that prevents you from being able to do most physical activities?
Yeah, well, that's where he's probably going to be frustrated, because he knows, I'm assuming he knows he has a lot to work on and wants to work on, and usually guys will, you know, during the season, assess their game and then, you know, pinpoint things that they can then work on in the off season, where he's not probably going to get that opportunity to go flat stick and work on different things. But he's going to have to watch tape. He's going to have to watch film. He can still do a lot of the touch things, get his hands and everything better and better as much as he can for catching and all that kind of stuff. And then it's a matter of just getting healthy and get through that. But there's other ways you can do things, like I said, film, listening to guys like Draymond and Steph, and just studying the game now. You know, he's on the bench now, in a suit, watching game, just watching the nuances of adjustments that Steve Kerr makes. And, all right, what's Draymond doing on that ball screen? We got scored on. How has he adjusted? Watching those kind of things, that's what you hope his brain's kind of taking overthinking when he's in those games, watching, because you can still learn a lot by not playing.
So, you know, that's one of the draft picks. That was James Wiseman. They also got Nico Mannion later in the draft as well. But one of the picks that they got that a lot of people didn't know anything about was Justinian Jessup. And he goes over to Australia, plays for the Hawks in Australia. And have you gotten a chance to watch a lot of his games? And what should Warriors fans be excited about when it comes to Jessup?
Yeah, I have. He can shoot the ball. And that's probably the first thing the Warriors to look at when they're looking at players. He's got a wet ball, and he's happy to shoot it. I thought him coming over here, I didn't know too much about him. I don't follow college basketball as much as I should. I thought he'd be, you know, adjusting to a professional league, be feet set threes, you know, finding his way in a professional league, getting through all that stuff. But what surprised me is he can handle the ball better than I thought. So he's not just a standstill shooter. He had a couple of plays a month ago, put a, you know, transition behind his back twice, up for a layup, you know, so he can handle it a little bit. But his degree of difficulty on some of his shots have been what has impressed me. You know, some, everyone's doing the step back, he's doing it as well. He knocked some of those down. He's happy to go in for a pull up if they run him off the three. Defensively, he still needs to work on that game a little bit. But anyone his age is going to have to figure out, you know, the game defensively. I ended up being an all-league defender, and I was labeled as a defensive bust coming out of college. So he's going to have to learn that. But I think, honestly, I think he'd have a chance to play a small fit role for the Warriors right now with their injuries and ups and downs, where you put him in the corner, you know, I think it's basically the fourth step even more, because you're not going to leave a Jessup. So it'll be interesting to see if they actually call him up and bring him into the squad, because, we just had D.D. Lazada, the Sydney Kings team that I was affiliated with. He just got caught up by New Orleans and pulled out of the NBL. And I wouldn't be surprised if something happens to Jessup.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of, let's say, he's not coming up this year, of course, but next season, there's a lot of enthusiasm about him. And the Warriors could absolutely use shooting. When he was drafted, people saw his size, the fact that he could shoot. They say, oh, he's Duncan Robinson. That's his ceiling, right? Or some would say, well, he's a lefty, and obviously they think about Australia, and they say Joe Ingles in that way. Is there a comparable that you would think that just in the league as soon as next year, maybe the year after, that he can kind of, you know, that's his ceiling or someone he should resemble?
Yeah, it's a hard one. I think, Duncan Robinson probably most similar. I mean, he's no Joe Ingles. Like, he's not, I haven't seen that from his game. Maybe he has it, but he's not creating. I mean, Joe Ingles is a very underrated playmaker. As we've seen the last month or two, he's had double digits this game. Very good off the pick and roll. Takes the time off it and really creates and gets the right shot. He's not that guy today. I think you compare him more to a Duncan Robinson, you know, someone that'll knock down a three. No one's leaving him. And, you know, one dribble pull up and battle defensively. I think he's bigger than I thought. You know, he's taller and kind of getting stronger. So I think that'll help him. But I think he'll be an NBA player. It's a matter of, you know, what system he goes in, who he's playing with. And that's what it comes down to. But a guy that shoots the ball that well and is confident shooting step backs and tough in your face, hand up in your face threes, will eventually carve out a role in the NBA, whether you like it or not.
One of the reasons why the Warriors could use more shooters and is because, you know, Klay Thompson has been out now for 2 years about. Have you spoken to Klay since he, you know, hurt his Achilles? And what do you think that he'll be able to accomplish once he gets back? Because 2 years is a very long time to not play any professional basketball.
Yeah, it's killing Klay. Obviously, he's a guy that has never had to deal with injury. You know, he's a guy that's been pretty lucky from that front early in his career. And I think he's a guy that's more like show up in the basketball, let's play basketball kind of guy. So I think the frustration for him is now, especially with the knee and the Achilles, it's like, okay, I've got to do all this rehab stuff. And with that long-term 9 to 12 months, you know, now, like you said, two-year rehab stuff, you know, you're doing stuff and it's Groundhog Day and you're not seeing results because it takes so long. And it's really a patient approach to get yourself stronger and stronger. And, you know, you don't see those results. For a guy like Klay, it's frustrating. Because like I said, he's a guy that's like, whatever's going on, I'm just going to show up and play basketball. Well, that's now taken away from him. So he's frustrated, but I think, you know, he'll grind through it once he's back. He's definitely a guy that, that'll fight through injuries and play through pain, as we saw, you know, shooting the free throw when he hurt himself in that final series. So it'd be great to see him back out there and give them an opportunity to have that Black Brother connection back on the floor, which everyone loves to watch.
What do you, I mean, you dealt with some injuries in your career as well, obviously different than what Klay is going through, but, you know, do you expect him after all this to come back and immediately be able to play heavy minutes? Do you, and they mentioned that he's probably going to be, you know, eased into it a little bit, but knowing Klay as you do, I'm sure it's going to be kind of hard to kind of rein him in.
Yeah, it's probably not going to be Klay's decision, I'd imagine. You know, he's still one of your franchise guys. I don't think you want to throw him in for 30, 35, 40 minutes a night straight away. As frustrating as it's going to be, they're going to have to monitor him. You know, those two injuries that he had, you know, they're really, I mean, they're tough because they can reoccur to some extent and they can, you know, hinder other parts of your body. So you have to be really careful with the rehab and make sure that you're not going too soon. And we've seen that with numerous players that come back from ACLs, they come back from Achilles injuries, they come back from whatnot, that if you come back too early or don't rehab properly, you know, the other side goes, the other leg goes, you know, you have back issues. So I'd imagine they'd ease him in. And the luxury they have to do that is that they've got a young group with a lot of energetic guys. And I mean, even if you can get Klay out there 15 minutes, 18 minutes a night for the first, you know, quarter of the season, you take that rather than having him, you know, not play.
Yeah, well, in that case, let's say Klay Thompson does come back and he either plays for 15, 20 minutes at first. Let's say he even comes back at full strength halfway through the season. This team as it is right now, if you add Klay Thompson to it, do you think they could be title contenders immediate just like that? Or what else do they need to add besides Klay Thompson?
I don't think they're title contenders yet. I think the development of Wiseman probably the big one to see where he's at. But when you've got Klay, Steph and Draymond, they'll win 50 plus. It's that lineup being healthy, in my opinion. And throw Wiseman in there, but they're probably a piece or two away. There are Andre Iguodala and, you know, someone like that can really do a lot of things that doesn't need the ball. I think they're that piece away from once again contending. But obviously their bench is going to be the issue. Beyond their starting five, what do they do with their bench? And that's no disrespect to those guys. They've got a lot of guys on that bench that battle, that are grinders, that come out and give you all they got. But when you look at how deep the West is and you look at the Lakers and the Clippers and some of these things, it probably isn't enough today. But I'd imagine that, Bob Myers, the front office, are doing whatever they can to reassess that in the offseason. And like I said, if you, Steph, Draymond, Clay healthy, the other pieces around them, you're already halfway there and you've got a chance to go to the playoffs and first, second, third round. But there's still a few pieces away from, once again, being, that final juggernaut we saw in the past.
If you're GM Andrew Bogut, just for a second here, you have, Andrew Wiggins has put together pretty solid season defensively. He's shooting a better percentage from three than he has in his entire career. You have potentially Wiseman as an asset. You potentially even have the Wolves pick coming up. Do you try to land a big fish and put a big package together to bring him in with Steph? Or do you, in your mind, start developing and try to keep this group together and work with that and add this Iguodala type that you're talking about?
Great question. And that, Steph will probably get in the brain trust of whether the Warriors are going a development route. Are they going a left hand on a chip route, or are they going a hybrid route? Now, I don't think the hybrids work long term. I think you're going to go one or the other. And I was probably in the boat of trying to throw Wiseman and something else for Beal back 2 months ago, just in the basis of you get Beal right now, you're probably moving up and being a bit more competitive this season. But then next season, you've got a legitimate lineup out there. So, and that comes down to the question of Steph getting older, he'll still be able to play long term just because of the way he shoots the ball. But the elite level we're seeing today, I mean, who knows how long he has left there? A couple of years, probably 2-3 years at the level he is today, and there'll be a slight decline just from age, Clay's health. Do you go for the home run and say, okay, we've got Steph at this elite level for another 2 or 3 years? Do we, like you said, bring in Bradley Beal or bring in a Iguodala type that can really put us over the top and have us that one knockout punch again for a championship? Or do you just be in the middle of the pack, develop Wiseman and Steph sails off without another chip? That's the question, and that's probably a stressful conversation they're having in that war room at the Warriors, because there's no real right answer. We know the championship is a be-all and end-all, but you also want to have Steph sent off the right way and have him, even give the opportunity for him to compete for a championship. So that then obviously loses an opportunity to develop a kid like Wiseman if you make that move, where he could be an all-league center in 5 or 10 years. And there's a lot of unknowns with either decision you make.
Jay, I have one more follow-up for you before we let you go here. You talk about the choice, development versus go for the big fish, right? Big win now type mode. This coaching staff, this front office, this development team, they've pretty much been handed a really good team, right? Steve Kerr, Bob Myers. Obviously, everyone made additions and did what they did, but they haven't really had to go through that development stage yet. They haven't had to say, hey, let's start from the bottom, take these young guys and work their way up. Are you confident that these guys can do that? From what you've seen, are you confident in that? Because I know there's a lot of the fan base that wonders, like, is this something that these, this coaching staff and everyone is capable of doing? Do you have the confidence in everybody?
Well, that's unknown. We haven't had to, when I was there, we didn't have to do it. I mean, Steve Kerr inherited a pot of gold, taking that job. Let's not forget, it was the Knicks almost got him over the line. That would have ended, I assume we would have seen Steve Kerr commentating a few years after he signed for that Knicks job, and he ended up taking the Warriors job and struck gold, right? And Steve's strength and what he's done was managing personalities and doing all that stuff. So, and now it's on the page of development. I don't know. I mean, haven't had to do it. The team hasn't had to do it for the last, 7 years? Because you've had world-class elite players at different positions that knew what it was to win, and professionals, guys like Iguodala, David Lee, even your bench guys at times, Zaza, that knew their role and were happy to take it. So you didn't have to develop. But now you've got some younger guys, like the names you mentioned, and all of a sudden the development now is just as important. So I have confidence that they'll try to figure it out as best they can. Whether they can do it, that's yet to be seen, because it hasn't had to be a priority for the Golden State Warriors.
Andrew, I really appreciate you joining us. This is awesome catching up with you. And, you know, maybe we'll have to pick your brain after the season. You can break down everything that's happened in the offseason and tell us what you think.
No worries. Thanks for having me. Cheers.